at least for me, I don't know about you guys, I can see a correlation between my external reality and like the beliefs that I had at the time. So you were saying something about repetition and building and failing, but so many times when my belief in myself was like nil, it wasn't there, I would fail and then I would just like give up. Like I wouldn't even restart it. I would just say, there's no lesson here. I just failed. And then I would let it go.
And you don't even look for the lesson. So you miss the value in the failure because you're so focused on the failure.
Exactly. Yeah. And then to see that over time, you know, the beliefs start changing and then you're like, huh, okay, this isn't a failure. This is just an opportunity to try a different way or to change my approach. And then it keeps evolving over time.
Welcome back to the Making Money Podcast, where we talk about how to make more money, keep more of what you make, and make your money work harder for you. I am your co-host, Benjamin Foss, and sitting across from me, as always, is the very handsomely dressed Paul Ng. Paul, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing very well, Ben. How are you?
We're hanging in there, man. It's only Tuesday, and I'm ready for the weekend already. I'm ready to go. Let's fly off to Chicago and do a foodie tour.
I'm ready for it. I feel like we're going to have another comical show together.
Yeah, we're going to have another fun one. So, Seth, welcome back to the show. Thanks for coming back. For those of you who missed a couple weeks ago, we had Seth on from Editing House. It's H-A-U-S. House. And we talked a little bit about some ideas around mindset and mentality and how shifts in mindset can be so instrumental to changing the way that you move throughout the world, the way you see the world, and the way you see your own future. And so in order to kind of start, I want to recap a little bit, because part of what sort of inspired us to want to do this episode was your story. Related to when you first started on your entrepreneurial journey, you talked about having this mindset of a little bit more of lack related to money. And the idea of even making six figures was just an astronomical achievement to you. Mm-hmm. And now you're in a place where you're thinking, I want to be a millionaire by 40, right? So just a monumental shift in mindset, which I think is phenomenal. So walk us through a little bit. I know some of it may be a little bit of review from a couple weeks ago, but it's such a great lead-in. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about sort of that mindset shift you had and what caused that.
Yeah. Yeah, the mindset initially was just like this typical, I can't do it. Like, I'm incapable. There are so many people that are better than me. They're more qualified. And as I'm sure you know, when you have that internal dialogue, it affects like your output, it affects the actions that you're going to take or that you're even willing to take. And, you know, I think the success of one of my friends really pushed me over the edge. I was super happy for him. And once he just struck it big with this like $150,000 software engineer job with no college degree, and I was like, oh, cool, why am I reading all these, you know, you can do it books, but I'm not actually putting forth the effort. And so that moment I still reference because it's so pivotal. It really pushed me over the edge and really forced me to start looking deeper at like the subconscious thoughts that I have running. You know, I can say I feel good, I feel great, I feel all these positive things, but it's like subconsciously I wasn't really feeling it. And so I think your reality is really just a reflection of your subconscious thought, not necessarily what you consciously think. And so that was it. I just started working really diligently on like my mindset, my beliefs. How can I change it? Because trying to undo a belief is like one of the hardest things I think imaginable. And so it wasn't an easy path and it's not even done. Like there's always going to be this like next milestone to hit. But it's just super critical if you're going to do anything outside of your norm, I think.
Did you have any mentors that helped you along the way once you got to the mindset of I can actually do this?
Once I reached that point of like I'm doing it.
Yes.
No, I won't say I haven't had any mentors, but I've taken inspiration from like tons of different various figures on YouTube and all the different self-help books. So, you know, Tony Robbins is pretty high on the list. I mean, his books, I think Awaken the Giant Within was like the catalyst. Like that was the let's actually get this thing going. And so I just remember I kept reading books written by him. I started listening to tons of videos, podcasts, just surrounding myself with the opposite of what I believed prior. And so all those people, they weren't my direct mentors, but they definitely acted as mentors, I would say.
Kind of a catalyst, I guess, at that point.
Exactly, exactly. Just to kind of keep it, yeah, keep it going in that direction.
I love that because so many of us don't have the direct mentorship, but because of technology and media and the proliferation of so much great material on YouTube, on podcasts like this one, and others, you have an opportunity to be indirectly mentored by right. people that you would never have access to in right. real life, right? Like neither of us can call up Tony Robbins and have a FaceTime chat with him or, you know, any of these other people that we take inspiration from. But I want to go back to kind of what you alluded to early on. One, something kind of along those lines that really struck me years ago was reading John Maxwell's books on leadership. And in one of the books, he talked about the law of the mirror, which is basically that the extent to which you value yourself and see yourself will be reflected directly in how much you're willing to invest in yourself. Mm. So if you see yourself as a six, you'll invest in yourself as a six, not just in terms of like physical attraction, right? But in terms of your capacity, your capabilities, your potential.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so one of the first steps to unlocking that potential in many cases is believing and yeah. seeing that within yourself. And like a common quote that kind of gets thrown around the internet a lot, but it's true, is that like, if you don't believe in you, why do you expect other people to?
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of it kind of comes into almost, at times even a delusional belief in yourself, yeah. you know, yeah. because like you could say it's delusional because like, I don't have any evidence for this, mm-hmm. like there's no history, but it's like, but I believe that I can do this. And then you just step out. But that belief is so often a prerequisite for being willing to take those steps.
Yeah. And sometimes I would say the delusion might be the prerequisite to having that belief, because sometimes we have these like wild aspirations that are not a match to where we are. And I've seen it time and time again with friends and acquaintances who just have this like astronomical belief in something, but it really is just delusion. And I think the delusion is, it helps break up the friction. It helps you not have so much resistance when you're trying to do something, because you have to believe that you're capable of doing it. And a typical rational mind is probably going to be like, I can't do this, and here are all the reasons I can't. But the delusional person is going to make up every reason why they can. And so I think that to an extent, like, you do need a little bit of that delusion, because otherwise you're going to be a pessimist, you're going to be a realist, and you're going to look at the facts and say, you know what, it doesn't work out.
And I agree there. You know, thinking outside that box, and the farther you are from the inside of the box, the better it is.
Yeah.
Because your aspirations attaining to that goal mm-hmm. make you want to go further than you can do.
Yeah.
You know, it tests your abilities, mm-hmm. I think. And we're so in our comfort zones that yes. going outside that box is, oh, yeah. taboo, or, oh, we can't do that because I don't have the ability to. But, you know, what is the ability? Mm-hmm. It really is a mindset, isn't it? If you're able and willing, isn't that the first step?
I agree.
I love that. And, you know, it's only delusional until it happens, right? Yeah, and once right. you make it true, then it's mm-hmm. not delusional anymore. Then you're a visionary.
Mm-hmm. True.
Right? And I remember reading Walter Isaacson's bio of Steve Jobs years ago. And he talks about Steve Jobs' reality distortion field, mm-hmm. that his, not just the force of his personality, but the force of his belief in what Apple could do or next and during that season of his life was so strong that even when engineers were coming and telling him like, hey, the technology does not exist to do this, he's like, well, we're going to make it, mm-hmm. you know, and his reality distortion field is what made the iPod possible. It's what made the Mac possible. Mm. It's what made the iPhone possible.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, especially in entrepreneurship and in business, like, you have to be there, you get to a point where you have to be willing to say, I think everyone else is wrong, yeah. and I'm going to take a bet and a swing that yeah. we can make this happen.
100%. You know?
And like Elon did that with Tesla, right? Like, before Tesla, true. The idea of like mass market electric cars is like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, no, hybrids are the future. Gas yeah. is forever. And then now, like, every automaker in the world's making EVs pretty much, except for Toyota for whatever reason. But yeah.
they like their hybrids.
Yeah, they do like their hybrids.
So but do I.
But it just, when you want to do something really big, and the bigger the thing that you want to accomplish is, even if it's just big relative to you and your history, the more you need that kind of delusional level belief.
Yeah. I think your belief informs your actions. And so you reminded me of this Instagram reel I saw recently. It was Tiger Woods. He must have been like, don't quote me, but like 16 to 18. And he's being interviewed because he's doing this like PDGA, whatever championship. And he's like straight faced throughout the entire time, the entire interview. And I think the guy asks him like, what are your goals for this tournament? And he's like, yeah, I want to win. Like, I want to win. And this guy is just like, well, do you know who you're going up against? Like, these are like top level performers, and this is your first ever championship, and you're talking about winning. And the guy's literally laughing. Like, he's just like, okay. And he says verbatim, okay, you'll find out. But then, you know, you fast forward and Tiger Woods was really absolutely crushing it. And so what looked like delusion to other people is like what Tiger needed in order to inform his beliefs and his actions in him to get him to be the greatest golf player of history. So I just think that, yeah, you definitely need that air of like delusion. This, some people call it delusion, but I think it's just this like unfiltered belief.
Yeah, I think your word aspiration really supersedes the word delusional. And I think we need those doubting Thomases out there. I think that's a phrase that we use, or they've used. I think you need that because that is your driving force. When someone sits there and says, it's not likely, or you can't. And I hate the word you can't. I've been told that so many times in my life, and I have made it a point to prove so many wrong, and some were right. But when someone gives you that challenge where they say you can't, I think, well, of course I can. Why? What makes you think, or what makes you believe that I'm not going to succeed in this?
Yeah.
You know, I've had so many people, just a short interjection on this, is that when I started my chicken farm, I had 25 people show up. And out of those 25 people, half of them doubted me. Literally said, you're joking. This is a total joke. You'll never succeed the way you're doing this. And not that I have succeeded, but I have far surpassed what I claim to be where I should be today. You know, I look at it as it was a great challenge. And why not challenge somebody?
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to get your juices going, or anyone's juices going, is by really giving them a challenge of disbelief.
Yeah, absolutely. That reminds me, I just picked up this audiobook. It's only an hour long. It was recommended on another podcast as one of the best business books of all time. And it's written by a 14-year-old, and it's called Don't Tell Me I Can't. And that is the whole premise of the book. And this 14-year-old, I have to preface that he's passed away as of like a couple years ago. So he passed a little early. But he did so many things. He did a lot more in his like short 14, 15-year-old life than most people would ever do. And he started with zero. Like, some people might think that when they hear that he started a business when he was seven, that it was his parents helping him. His mom was blind. His dad was like permanently disabled in a wheelchair. And so he, instead of doing traditional homeschooling, he like forced his parents to let him listen to Warren Buffett videos as his education. And
that's a pretty good education, if you ask me.
All he did. And so, I mean, he had his like first property at age seven, which was a ranch. And then he bought a house at like age 10, which was a fixer-upper house. And then he did all these various things. And the whole premise of the book is just don't tell me that I can't do it, because I'm going to do it. And so I think having that like aspiration, that like unlimited belief in yourself, again, really is going to dictate like what you think you're capable of doing, and therefore what your actions are going to be in life. And yeah, I think that's like a simple illustration of it, you know?
I love the part of the entrepreneur mindset too, is you either like you'll win or you'll learn. And so there's an element of optimism in that, of recognizing that there's, you know, so many, I mean, if you think about like Steph Curry, his how many shots in practice has he done? He's something like 500 a day, every day for years and years and years. And, you know, and we talked before, like Michael Jordan has the most missed shots in NBA history, right? And he's the GOAT. So there's an element of like, we forget, we see the successes, like we see all the Super Bowls that Tom Brady won, but we forget about the ones that he lost, right? Or the years that he never made it to the Super Bowl. And we forget it, all the failures, quote unquote failures, that it takes to get to the success, the practice, the repetitions, the lessons that have to be learned. And I remember I was listening to one entrepreneur and he said, you know, the reason why I win is because by the time most people decide to start, I've already started and failed three different ideas of this thing and figured out how I need to do it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like or I heard someone say, you might appreciate this with your business. I heard someone say the difference between a good photographer and a great photographer is the size of their trash can. Which is, okay. You know, basically it's the idea. It's repetition. Mm-hmm. It's just you learn by doing. Yeah. You learn by doing things over and over and over again. Right. And so many people are so focused on the negative of like, what if I fail? What if it doesn't succeed? What if I lose? Start over.
Yeah.
So right. You can always start, like, you're still breathing. You're still here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not talking about jumping out of airplanes without parachutes for real, only metaphorically.
Yeah.
And so, like, as long as you're still here, you're still breathing, like, you still have a chance. I mean, some kid could buy a house at age 7. I mean. Yeah.
That says a lot.
Yeah. And I think it's so cool to be able to look back at where you've come from. And, like, at least for me, I don't know about you guys, I can see a correlation between my external reality and, like, the beliefs that I had at the time. So you were saying something about repetition and building and failing, but so many times when my belief in myself was like nil, it wasn't there, I would fail and then I would just like give up. Like I wouldn't even restart it. I would just say, there's no lesson here. I just failed. And then I would let it go.
And you don't even look for the lesson. So you miss the value in the failure because you're so focused on the failure.
Exactly. Yeah. And then to see that over time, you know, the beliefs start changing and then you're like, huh, okay, this isn't a failure. This is just an opportunity to try a different way or to change my approach. And then it keeps evolving over time, which I think like having that flexibility of thought is like, it's essential. Like if you have like huge goals for yourself or aspirations or things you just want to achieve, like you have to have like the detachment from the bad and the flexibility to say that, yeah, this is a lesson. It's not like a failure, you know?
But everything is an experience though. I feel, you know, taking the failure as an experience, you know, there's nothing wrong with not accomplishing 100% of where you started from and to the end. It's the fact that you actually did start something and you did continue it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's failure is really the mindset, as we're going to say, because that's our topic today, is really the mindset of overcoming. You know, we don't want to see our successes be someone else's failure. You know, I say that very strongly because if I'm succeeding in something, I want someone else to succeed with me. So that means I want to take someone on that journey.
Yeah,
you know, not just me, because why harbor all of that?
Yeah,
you know, I always love to give everyone the opportunity to learn because I want to learn from you just as I would love for you to learn from me.
Mm-hmm.
And why not make it a win-win?
Yeah.
Even though that isn't 100% success, there was still something that was accomplished from beginning to end, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, right. It's all perspective. It's like how you look at it. And yeah. Doing something and producing something, even if it's not the way that you wanted it to turn out, is still something, you know, and it's something that you can take and mold and shape and use to propel you to the next step or the next thing, you know?
Absolutely.
You mentioned Tony Robbins earlier. Mm. I was actually coincidentally listening to his episode on Modern Wisdom recently, which was kind of interesting.
Mm.
And he talked about how he's like in the way that even the language that he uses, he is very intentional about avoiding anything that leads to or portrays like a victim mindset, a victim mentality.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm never the victim, right? Even the stuff that he suffered as a kid with alcoholic parents, whatever, like, no, I'm not, I'm not the victim. And it kind of reminds me of like, there's this idea in psychology of like internal versus external locus of control. So people who have a very high external locus of control, they think life happens to them. They have this hand that they've been dealt, and everything is there. Those are the victims, right? Those are the people who walk around saying, woe is me, because someone said this to me when I was 8 and I was born into this kind of neighborhood or whatever. People who have a very high internal locus of control are the ones who take responsibility. They're the ones who take the reins of their life and say, yeah, that shit happened and it sucked, but this is my life now.
Yeah.
And it's up to me to move forward and to press on and to forgive if I need to forgive, to heal if I need to heal, whatever it may be, in order to reach these goals that I have or these dreams that I have. And I'll tell you what, I don't think there's very many billionaires who have an external locus of control. You know, it's all very high internal locus. People who believe like I can reshape the world and reshape my reality into the way that I want it to be.
Yeah.
And I think that we don't need to be deterministic about this. You know, if you're listening to this, you don't want to say like, oh, well, I just have an external locus of control and that's just how it is. No. You can change your mindset about that. You can adopt the responsibility. Mm-hmm. And like Jocko Willink talks about how he has like this idea of extreme responsibility. Mm-hmm. So everything, you know, he like flips houses and stuff at times. He's ex-military. Everything that goes wrong, he's like, why is this my fault? And because he's like, if it's someone else's fault, there's nothing for me to change. There's nothing for me to learn, right? But if I take extreme ownership of that and responsibility of that thing that went wrong, even if someone else screwed up, but it's like, well, maybe I could have followed up better. Maybe I could have communicated better. Maybe we need better processes or systems in the business or whatever.
Right.
And so like, if you have that mentality, that mindset, that's where you learn. That's where you grow. And even those things that are, most people would say, yeah, that someone else screwed up, it's their fault. But you can still learn because you have that internal locus of control, that high responsibility mindset. And I think like that is the mentality of winners.
I'd like to ask on that same note to the two of you guys, do you remember, like, were you guys born with this disposition to like think positive and take responsibility?
No.
And I would love to hear, do you guys know like when that shifted or when it started shifting?
You go first.
It was the result of doing hard things and watching myself improve, whether it be related to skills or whether it be related to sort of character. And then it's like I got a little taste of the positivity cocaine and I was like, I want more. Give me some more. But no, it came as a consequence of seeing like, man, I used to suck at this. Mm. And then I put some work in and now I'm pretty good.
Right.
I wonder what else I could do this with. Yeah. And that's like, once that train gets rolling, man, it just kind of gains a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
At least it did for me.
Yeah.
What about you?
I remember it distinctly. I was 14. I was in my bedroom and my brother came up to me and said, you will always be a follower and never be a leader.
Mm. Wow.
Well, I mean, those words came out of his mouth and I thought to myself, who the F are you to tell me?
See, this is why we have brothers to uplift us and support us.
Totally,
and
punch you around. Jeez. But it was from that point forward that changed everything. You know, my sister went to BYU, and I was least likely to graduate high school, least likely to go to college. I was the least likely of everything, right? And so I showed them. So during my senior year, I decided I was going to go to a JC half day and then do the half day at high school. So I matriculated into college as a sophomore and graduated at the same time as my sister.
Oh, wow.
So I proved everybody wrong there. And I don't like being told no.
Yeah.
You know, and it all started at age 14. So, wow. And sometimes people will dictate who and what you'll become if you allow them. Mm-hmm. And like Eleanor Roosevelt once said, no one can make you feel inferior unless you allow them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in my world, there is no room for that.
That's so true. Wow. I love that story.
Oh, everybody does. And everyone, my brother will tell you, yeah, I told him he would never make it. And now he made me look like a fool. But, you know,
yeah,
I think it's like you said, it is a mindset, but you need to have something to give you that push.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you don't have a backbone of somebody else to help push you along because you're too young, or you don't have a spouse or a partner or a best friend that can help you get to that next level, who's going to do it? You got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't know of any other better person than you and yourself and you alone to make that happen.
Absolutely.
What about for you, Seth?
Yeah, my villain origin story, if you will, started, I was working at 24 Hour Fitness when I was around like, I think 18, 19. And occasionally I would work the children's daycare.
Oh, man.
And
bless your heart.
Bless my heart. And look, the kids liked me. I enjoyed messing with the kids, like, you know, playing around, bantering, all that stuff. And so it was kind of a fun gig. And I don't know what I said, but one of the little girls, she was like 4 years old. I said something, and then her response was, "Seth, just be positive." And it kind of just hit me. I'm like, wow, I guess I have a negative disposition. Like, I'm always talking about things that are not going well or things that are not working. And, I mean, that wasn't the moment that everything changed. But I remember back in the day, I don't know if these still exist, but you can – what is it? Were you a label maker. I took a label maker. I wrote positive, and I stuck it on the back of my phone so that I'd have to see the word positive. And nice. It was all because of that, like, three-year-old little girl. And I started becoming, I'd say, a lot more cognizant of my thinking and the direction of my thought from that moment. And
I love that. Yeah.
Positive on the back. I'm going to stick it on my phone.
There you go.
I'm going to put it right there, everybody.
It's a good reminder. It's because, you know, we get inundated with all the responsibilities of life. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to remember to, like, whenever, stay positive. Not that you're supposed to force it, but it's just a good reminder.
Kind of like your dream board.
Just like a dream board. It's just on the back of your phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, with the voice of a screaming three-year-old child.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, there's some very powerful ways to give messages to yourself and to reinforce. And I think that's one of the most underrated aspects of sort of that transformation that people think, because they think, oh, I listened to a podcast or I watched a video or had a great conversation and I felt really inspired for the moment. But then, like, tomorrow or next week or whatever, like, you won't remember that. And it's one of the reasons why, like, for example, in the Old Testament, in the Christian Bible, there is in the Torah, when they were giving the instructions for the priests, they're like, hey, write this stuff down. And they would roll up in a little paper and put it in a box and literally wear it on their head or, you know, or on their wrist or whatever. And it's this idea of, like, you are a hairless monkey and you need to learn how to remember things, and because you will forget and you just need to be reminded over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so, like, I do that. Like, my phone backgrounds, like, rotate between a couple different things that are just as reminders, or, like, I have a tattoo on this arm that serves as a reminder to, like, be worthy of the gifts that I've been given, like, not take them for granted.
Yeah.
And it's because, like, I need those reminders. I recognize that. Or, like, I wear a necklace that says Ad Astra Per Aspera, just through hardship to the stars. Mm-hmm. It's the reminder that the hardship is the prerequisite for the place that I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
And it's – but we need those reminders, right? We need – you know, it's like the transformation doesn't happen because of a one-hour podcast, right? It's an ongoing thing, because the old habits and thinking patterns have been reinforced 1,000 times, a million times. Mm-hmm. And so it takes more than – Nala's joining the podcast now. But it takes more than just a one-off thing to really change a pattern of behavior.
Yeah. If you go to my space right now, you'll see a good amount of Post-it notes everywhere. Like, I took that practice from, like, over 10 years ago of Post-it notes and just plastering them. And they're just – sometimes they're affirmations, and then sometimes they're just one words, because I know what the words mean. But this idea of, like, impressing upon your subconscious is, like, super, super relevant. Like, I don't know if you guys have heard of NLP at all, neuro-linguistic programming.
A little bit. Yeah.
But I will say it is the scientific explanation of the law of attraction. So I got kind of lucky that I read this book called NLP for Dummies. And then years later, I found The Secret. So I was able to say, well, this is exactly what was in this book. But NLP is basically the way the book describes it is it's the communication of the brain. And it really puts an emphasis on, like, your subconscious and how important it is to nurture the subconscious. And so when we do things like that, the tattoo, the Post-it notes, the writing positive, it's just, you don't need to consciously be aware of it, but your subconscious needs to have that nudge every once in a while. And I can't underestimate or understate the importance of that, at least in my life, like affirmations, Post-it notes, all sorts of weird gimmicks that I just love to do, because it helps.
Different things work for different people, you know, so find what works for you, but reinforce the thought patterns, habits, and beliefs that lead you toward the kind of person that you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. Because there's all kinds of things out there in the world, on social media, on TV, or whatever, that are pulling you in directions that you don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jeff Bezos, in his last letter to Amazon as CEO, it was all about how it's freaking brilliant. And if you follow entrepreneurship stuff, you may have seen it because it's like, it's, you know, everyone was like, this is amazing. But he talked about how the nature of the universe is to pull us, is to pull us toward nominal, basically the whatever the norm is, right? And that is death. By definition, like, for example, right now, all of our bodies are maintaining a temperature, you know, 98.6 Fahrenheit, whatever, that is different from the ambient temperature of the room, right? Our cells are regenerating, which keep us distinct from the natural world around us, right? Because what happens when a body dies, if it, you know, lay it in the forest, whatever, eventually it decays and becomes indistinguishable from the ground around mm-hmm. it. And so the nature of being alive is distinctiveness. Mm-hmm. And as either as an individual or as a business, it is crucial that we actually try to maintain our distinctiveness from that environment, because to become one with the environment is death mm-hmm. in a mm-hmm. very real and metaphorical sense. And so these things that we're talking about, the reinforcement, is part of maintaining the distinctiveness of who I want to be as a man or as a woman, or as a business owner, or as a partner, or whatever, as is distinguished from the natural poles of, and just the what is the, like, scientific word of, like, just constantly losing momentum? I'm trying to, entropy of the universe, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a really cool thing. For if you just Google, like, Jeff Bezos last letter to Amazon or something, like, you'll come. It's like one page, but it's really profound. Hmm.
Yeah, I'll look that up, because that does. I like the way that was described. The universe is, what was it, is pulling us towards nominal?
Well, yeah, just like the nominalism, or just mm-hmm. the whatever the de facto default is.
Yeah,
you know,
which is typically negative. I mean, if we're talking about, like, just our general disposition, like, everything's kind of pointed in the other direction, the direction that's like telling you no, you can't do it, or look how bad this is. Look at the news that happened. Like, oh my gosh. Like, so I think I like that phrasing a lot, because it helps put it in a different perspective.
Well, it takes us out of complacency too, mm-hmm. because that's what it becomes, where it's like, whatever, if I'm going to fail, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, so don't bother doing it. So we become complacent to this is what's going to happen, versus challenge yourself and mm-hmm. go to that next level. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Going against the grain. And
always against the grain. Yeah, I like that.
You know what's interesting is, you know, if you think about eulogy. So I read one of my favorite books I've ever read. It's called The Road to Character by David Brooks. And it's each chapter of the book is a mini biography of a person that represents a particular virtue. And so it's all storytelling, but it's freaking brilliant. But in the intro or the prologue to the book, he talks about the idea of eulogy virtues. Like striving toward the things that you want people to talk about at your funeral, right? Mm-hmm. And you think about, like, people are not going to say, oh, yeah, he, you know, was just normal and never rubbed anyone the wrong way. And, like, what are they going to talk about? Part of what they're going to talk about is distinctiveness, the things that made you unique. Or if you're just like, man, I really miss that guy. Like, he always made the dumbest jokes, but I miss that guy, you know? Or, like, she was, like, such a nerd, I just miss her. You know, like, it's the uniqueness is the things that we get insecure about or embarrassed about. Those mm-hmm. are the things that people remember about us, because that's what makes us distinct and unique mm-hmm. from the norm, from the environment, as, you know, as individuals. And so that's one thing I've been thinking a lot about, like, the last 6 or 12 months is learning to embrace my own distinctiveness and weirdness and own it and be like, yeah, this is me.
Yeah.
You know, and like, this is just me being distinct. This is the individuality shining through it, rather than trying to suppress it mm-hmm. in an attempt to blend in.
I like that. Recently I had my own coming out where I was like, I'm an extremist. Like, I just am. Like, not in the actions, like the sports sense of the word, but just like the way I live my life. I'm an extremist. I do things on the extreme side of the spectrum. And it was a little, I don't want to say embarrassing, but I'd always feel like I had to preface things when I talked to people, or like I'd have to hide a little bit of myself. But
are you like all or nothing?
I'm kind of all or nothing. And I'm just like, if you're not going to do it at its fullest, then why do it at all? And so I do, like, it's kind of a sickness. You probably relate. Like, I won't stop working. I won't stop doing things. I won't stop experimenting with every part of my life. And I'm at the point where it's like, if I'm holding that back, if I'm like feeling the need to like suppress it, then I'm probably doing my own self a disservice.
Absolutely.
That is just my default. So like, why would I hide that? You know, it's only going to hurt me. It's not going to, whether I'm an extremist or not, it's not going to affect anyone else. They're going to have commentary, but holding it back is really only going to hold myself back. So I'm with you. I'm coming out as my extreme, natural, quirky self.
I'm just like, fuck balance, man. Who needs to be balanced? Yeah. I mean, there's health, there's taking care of mental health. Like, right. All that stuff's legitimate, but it looks different for different people. And, you know, people like, oh, I don't want your life because it's so imbalanced. I'm like, fine, you don't need my life. Like,
yeah. That's what makes us individuals.
Yeah.
Why would I want to be identical to you?
Exactly.
Maybe I don't.
Exactly.
But I think sometimes people are made uncomfortable by the life choices of other people, which is just funny to me. It's like, you're going to die. We're going to die. They're going to die.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No one will remember you in 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I promise.
Probably not even the next week.
Right. I mean, they're not thinking about you now, right?
Yeah. Unless it's tax season, it'd be like, oh, crap, there's no Paul.
Oh, there's
no Paul. That's going to be the problem.
Yeah. You're around on people's planes. There was this, like, I think it's Far Side, a comic book or something from a long time ago, but it was like a flock of sheep, and then there's this one that's just like, hey, what are we all doing? And I just remember that resonating with me because I always felt like a little bit other than, or like why is everyone going down this road when I feel the urge to go the other way? And I think there's really something in just embracing it, because sometimes the opinions of other people really can be a suppressant. I think you'd mentioned something about other people can decide who you become, and it's so true. And I think for a lot of years I held myself back because I let the opinions of literally my family, which a lot of those were just self-conceived. I don't think anyone necessarily outwardly told me these things, but I would feel like I need to hold back, or I need to suppress myself, or I need to not be who I am. And it's like, there's no value in that. So,
yeah. And you just make yourself miserable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, you got one life to live.
Yeah.
You know, why are we going to waste our time trying to appease other people that we don't even like, or, you know, and all of that. But, you know, I think like there's probably someone listening to this right now that wants to start a business, but they are held back because they're afraid of the social judgment, the social fallout. And I just say, just do it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Because, absolutely. And the way that I like to frame this is the 90-year-old deathbed me. Like, what will 90-year-old me on my deathbed regret more?
Mm-hmm.
The things that I tried that didn't work out, or the things that I thought about trying but was too scared?
Mm.
You know? And it's definitely the latter, right?
Yeah.
It's like, do I want the story of my life to be he just did what everyone expected of him because he was too scared to break out of the box. Like, really? Like, is that what I want my life? No. I want to be like, man, this guy would not stop trying stupid shit, you know? And it's like, but I would rather have that story.
Yeah.
You know, and my tombstone can say, try dumb shit. Eventually something will work.
Yeah.
You know, and I would rather that be the legacy than just another nominal person that just went through the rat race that other people set up for him.
Yeah.
Other people that did not even have his best interest at heart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Agreed.
There's this exercise that I haven't done, but on the topic of tombstones and eulogies, is to write your own obituary. It also came from that NLP book that I read. And it's one thing I really would like to try, because I think it's going to help give clarity to the type of person you think you are, and then help you learn to like change things up if you're going in a direction you don't want to go. So if your tombstone or your eulogy is just going to say, yeah, you know, he did the basic things, which is fine for some people, but for me, it's not acceptable. But, you know, if it just says he did the basic things, he lived a normal life, then great. If that's okay with you, fine. But for me, it's like, I really want to make sure that says like who I was, what I did, took all the risks, did all the things, and wasn't like afraid of like making mistakes, you know? So maybe it's something I'll try in the next week or so.
One thing that can be really helpful kind of along those lines is there's something online. You can Google this. It's called the Future Authoring Program. Mm. And the gist of it is, I think they have you kind of take stock of your life as it is and kind of rate various aspects. But then they have you do two writing exercises. The first is what they call your hell, which is, what is the worst version of your future look like if you make all the wrong decisions, if things don't go your way, et cetera? And then to heaven, what is the best version of your future look like? And it's in the part of the point is to create a contrast. So, and this is was inspired by a test run by B.F. Skinner, who is a really famous behavioral psychologist who worked with rats. So they would take a rat who is very hungry, and they would tie a string to his tail to measure how hard it pulled. Okay, then they would waft in the smell of cheese from down a tube, and measure how hard it pulled. And you know it's pretty hungry, so it pulled. But then they did another experiment where they had the same setup, but they also had the smell of a cat waft in from behind, and the rat pulled way harder.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, fear.
Yeah. So there's an element of like we not only need a heaven to chase, but a hell to run from. Mm-hmm. And if you are in that mindset of you're going to do the eulogy thing, I would encourage you to write two versions.
Yeah.
Write the ideal version and write the worst case, the one you don't want. Because if you have a future you're trying to avoid and one you're trying to chase, you're going to run a lot harder.
Absolutely.
True.
And it's going to give you more clarity.
More, a lot more. Yeah. I think that's a really good way to put it. Yeah, absolutely. I have one more question I wanted to ask you guys.
Yeah.
Like, what would you say is like in your own respective businesses, the most important of the mindsets that you kind of adopt? You know, I don't know if that makes sense to you guys, but I like, what is the one guiding mindset that like keeps you going, or belief system, or anything of that nature?
You go first.
My guiding force and belief system for almost all of my industries is being able to have empathy and compassion for the situations that arise, and being able to compartmentalize that versus taking it and just throwing it out. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we always like to use the word, I'm so sorry, I wish I could do something, you know, and there really is something we can do. So take away from that sympathy part and go, you know, I really understand there's a lot of problems in your life that's happening. I will be here as an ear for you, and I will have a shoulder for you to cry on. Mm-hmm. I don't have the answers for you today, but let me see what I can do to help you along the way.
Mm. I like that.
And I believe that is probably the most sanctifying thing in my profession outside of my skill set. So many times we're just so detached from everything that it becomes clinical. All right, this is what I'm going to do for you, and this is what I'm going to get out of it, and this is what you're going to get out of it, and thank you, you can pay me, I'll see you later. Mm-hmm. That's the normal procession of how the world exchanges goods for services, or monetary for services. So one of the two. But I like to go beyond that, because money only goes so far. And if you don't ever change your lifestyle, you don't need to make more than what makes you comfortable that you've always had. You know? And I feel empathy is a much stronger place to be than sympathy can ever replace.
I want to hit on that, because one of the biggest lies that is perpetually sold to us in the Western world is the materialism lie. It's this idea that you're one purchase away from a higher level of happiness.
True.
And I can honestly say, I mean, I've had entire years where I made like 20 grand in the whole year. And I've had times where I made 20 grand in 2 weeks. And, or at least in the business. And, you know, I own my own home now, and you know, I'm very comfortable. I am not measurably happier now than I was when I was making very little money or whatever. Because I realized that, like, there's things that are nice and are comfortable or whatever. But I mean, if something crazy happened and tomorrow I need to sell the house and go back to a one bedroom apartment, I wouldn't hardly bat an eye. I would be annoyed at all the stuff I have to get rid of, because it's like, oh, like this table won't fit in a one bedroom apartment, right? Like, I have bigger furniture now just to like make use of the space. But I think like there's something to be said about having a healthy detachment of those things, and kind of like to your point, like, pay attention to what really matters to you. Like, what is actually really meaningful to your life? And I think you'll probably notice that if you do the eulogy thing, there won't be anything in there about material possessions, except to the extent to which you care about what you leave to your future generations, right? That's going to be it, right? And so, but so much of our time and our attention is spent on these things that like don't measurably increase happiness. Like I'm not happier now than I was, but I'm any happiness that I have is based on sort of the internal work that is being done or the relationships that I have in my life, right? It's not the house, it's not the car, it's not whatever. Like that stuff is just, it sticks in drywall, you know?
I agree 100%.
Yeah, I wish I had an answer that was similar to Paul's because his was a lot more human and humane but as far as what drives him. But for me, it's just fear. Like, it's not a bad fear, but it's like this fear of not thriving and not financially or materially.
I can relate to that a lot.
Thriving and meeting my own expectations. And I hope that eventually that changes because, like we were alluding to in the beginning, like your beliefs do affect your actions. And so if I'm operating through fear, yes, it's propelling me forward, but it's also like a place of constraint. And my actions might be a little bit more either pointed or reserved than they should be. And so it's like a double-edged sword where it's like this fear of like failing and not measuring up to my own standards is like what's guiding me. But I see that it's also probably going to push me into a direction of like, I don't know, dissatisfaction, burnout, possibly just further limiting myself at some point. So, you know, I would like to eventually reach a place of empathy driving me. But yeah, that's kind of, I think, where my business motivations kind of are right now.
I feel, you know, for most entrepreneurs, scarcity mindset takes over versus the abundance mindset versus the ability. I mean, the three go all hand in hand because the ability to fail and the ability to succeed based upon lack and based upon abundance is all relative. And I don't feel that entrepreneurs get that mindset until it's too late, you know? And a lot of times the too late is I made it to the success already over here, but it took me this much longer. But what is really longer going to really change anything? Because in reality, that means you just learned a lot more along the way. It just took you a little longer, but you learned a lot more. And really, once again, I try to impress to all our listeners that being an entrepreneur really means to take those experiences and grow those experiences. It doesn't mean you have the answer all at one fell swoop because I'm an entrepreneur and I made it. Well, that's great, but there's always that point of I could learn more and I can offer more.
Very well said.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I had kind of an interesting mindset shift very recently. So February, business had its best month ever. Shortest month of the year. March, we beat it, that new record, by a few hundred bucks. And I didn't care. I did not care. We were, maybe not now, but at the time we were on pace for 50% year-over-year growth. And I did not care because I was working myself to the bone and I had like no balance. And I was like, I'm just working. I mean, so many days of starting at 7 a.m. and not finishing until 8 or 9 p.m.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this really what life is about? Like, okay, so I have an extra few thousand dollars this month that I, you know, that I'm used to. Whoop-de-doo. It's a number on a screen. It's true. You know what I mean? And especially in the digital age, you know, it's not like I'm like holding like here's $7,000. like a freaking drug lord or something, you know. But and so in the midst of all the ambition and the lofty goals and stuff, which we all have, and I think those are good things because I think doing hard things is good for you and it's good for the human spirit. There is also like a healthy recognition of like the limits of money, the limits of the materials, the limits of the accomplishments and the achievements. There's a reason why there's a higher suicide rate amongst millionaires than amongst any other group. It's because like there's people who strive so hard for the number and then realize they're still empty on the inside because like that's not the meaning of life. Like and so like if you asked me what is like the driving force, the driving force for me is financial security for my family. And like, even though like right now I don't have any kids or whatever, but I still have, you know, relatives that I try to help and take care of. And then, you know, future family members that I anticipate to have. And like that's for me is the driving force. And there's fear in that too. It's fear of not being able to provide. It's fear of you know, having kids that are, you know, left wanting or wearing, you know, t-shirts with holes in them and, you know, things like that, because there's just not enough. Mm-hmm. And but I would say that's kind of the driving force, is that sense of like, no, there's security here. But when you get to a certain point beyond that of abundance, which is nice, but it like it stops adding meaning or measurable happiness. It starts just being icing on the cake. And then you realize like other things that are worth your time and your pursuit, you know, like this by itself is not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could be deluding myself, but I'm always like, I appreciate and I relate to everything you just said, up to and including like the suicide rates. And then sometimes I'm just like, I understand that. And I just want to do it a little longer just so I can make sure that I like fulfill my goals. You know, I want to just give myself just like, I know it sucks. Like I'm really busting my butt right now. But I have a few more years and then I want to relax. And I agree that there should be more like balance introduced, especially in the now, because there are a lot of like,
well, there's seasons, man.
There's seasons.
Yeah. And a season could be 5 years.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, there's nothing, especially like you're single, you're young, whatever, like me, like, dude, if you want to take 5 years and just like, you know what, I'm going to like I said earlier, fuck balance, right? Yeah. Like this is what this 5 years is about. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's an element of like just recognizing, here's the season I'm in. Here's where I'm at. Here's where my mental state and my like mental health is at. And then just having that perspective. But yeah, dude, like go hard. Like there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's about enjoying and compartmentalizing it, actually.
A little bit,
I mean, you have to put it in its place.
You have to.
Awesome. Well, I think we could talk for another hour, but we all have things to do.
No, let's do it. I'm here. You're here. It's the here and now. It's the power of now. It's Eckhart Tolle living it. The present moment.
Well, the present moment, I have clients that I'm ignoring. So,
me too.
You know, clients that pay my bills, so... But Seth, it was great having you back on. Thanks for coming. Thanks for this idea. I've been actually wanting to do an episode that was more on the line of these kinds of topics and not just talking about business, which is what we mostly talk about, which I love. But there's a whole other side of things that I think is really important. And the last thing that I'd kind of like to leave the viewers with is there is no silver bullet formula that works for every single person. Mm-hmm. You know, and it takes some time and some experimentation and openness to find what works for you. There are some people who they don't want to be millionaires. They just I want to make my 150 grand a year and go on vacation. And like, that's great. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then there's other people who are just like, I just want to see if I can figure out how to become a billionaire.
Yeah.
I just want to see if I can do it, you know? And like, so just, there's no one size fits all. And that's part of the beauty of diversity, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd say, going back to what I said earlier, embrace your weirdness, your uniqueness, and run with it. And don't let anyone tell you that like your path is wrong. Unless you're trying to kill people.
Well, that's a whole nother topic. We'll bring in the specialist.
Well said.
All right. Well, Seth, thank you for coming on. And if you enjoyed listening to this podcast and got something out of it, I would love for you to take a moment, think of someone who you think would benefit from the thoughts and the ideas that we shared today, and take a moment and share it with them. It might just change their life. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you in the next one.